Likewise, on the unimpeded flow of commerce, especially in international airspace and international waters. This is true in the Indo-Pacific, ensuring that there's a free and open Indo-Pacific, but it extends beyond the Indo-Pacific. We share as a strategic value the fact that no international waterway, no international airspace should ever be used or nationalized by any country in the world, and that should never be accepted as a new normal.
This is my video update on this Sunday afternoon, May the 24th, coming to you from Moscow. Let's talk about some news. And before we get started with today's news stories, let me say a quick thank you to everyone that is liking these videos. Thank you very much for your likes. Thank you very much for subscribing to this channel. It is very much appreciated. And to all of those that are smashing, obliterating, demolishing that hype button, thank you so much for hyping up this video. Everyone loves the hype button. No one knows what it does, but everyone loves it. So thank you so much for hyping this video. Thank you so much for subscribing, for commenting, and for liking. I like it a lot. Let's talk about some news. And we got some big news stories to get to. Two very big news stories to discuss today. The first big news story is the strike into Kiev. We got the Russian military retaliation against Ukraine for the terrorist attack in Lugansk, which is now at 21 students killed in this dormitory strike into Lugansk. And the retaliation into Kiev, into all of Ukraine, but mostly focused on Kiev, was devastating. The largest strike into Kiev since the beginning of the special military operation. We are talking about hundreds of drones. We're talking about a lot of missiles, all the missiles from Kinzhal to Calibre to Iskander missiles. And we're also talking about an Oreshnik missile into Kiev. The first time that we have seen the Oreshnik being used in the capital city of Ukraine. And the targets were military targets, according to the Russian Ministry of Defense, which has issued a statement. They targeted military facilities and factories, decision-making centers. I've read some reports, it's not coming from the Russian Ministry of Defense, but some reports claim that even a part of the Ukrainian parliament, the Rada, was hit in these strikes. But I would take that with a huge grain of salt. I don't believe that the Rada was hit, but there are some reports claiming that it was targeted and hit. The Russian Ministry of Defense, they don't really get into too many details as to what they were targeting and what they hit. They usually do not get into the specifics of what they were targeting, but they did give a breakdown of the missiles that were used. The Russian Ministry of Defense, they said that the attack was indeed, the strike into Kiev was indeed in retaliation for the terrorist attacks by Ukraine against civilian objects in Russia. That is what the Russian Ministry of Defense said. And they go on to say the armed forces of the Russian Federation carried out a massive strike by Oreshnik ballistic missiles, Iskander air-launched ballistic missiles, Kinzhal hypersonics, air-launched ballistic missiles, Tsirkan, ground-based cruise missiles, as well as UAVs, against military command and control facilities, air bases, and enterprises of the Ukraine Defense Ministry. The targets were defeated. All the assigned facilities were neutralized. That is the statement from the Russian Ministry of Defense. One Oreshnik was used. Some reports claim two, but it was one Oreshnik. the Russian Ministry of Defense says Oreshnik ballistic missiles. I believe they use the plural because the Oreshnik actually breaks up into as many warheads in the Oreshnik. So anyway, that is the Russian Ministry of Defense. That's their statement with regards to this strike into Kiev. One of the military facilities that was targeted is the Artem military facility, which is in Kiev or on the outskirts of Kiev. This is a huge, huge military facility, sprawling facility, which Russia has targeted in the past, but not at this level. And it does manufacture a lot of Ukraine's weapons, a big part of Ukraine's military industrial complex. It would need a lot of missiles to destroy this Artem facility, but perhaps that is what we saw yesterday. Why after 4 years? Many analysts are asking the question, why after 4 years has Russia finally decided to really go after this facility? I don't know. I cannot answer that question. But I do know that many facilities are in densely populated areas, so you do have the risk, run the risk of civilian casualties. But this facility was targeted, and just to give you an idea as to what we're talking about here, the Artem plant is known to produce air-to-air missiles, automated air-guided missile training and maintenance systems, anti-tank guided missiles, and aircraft equipment, is according to AMK mapping. One of the commenters on X posted, normally this is the kind of facility that should have been destroyed within a month of the outbreak of hostilities. The fact that such a facility has been left untouched until now is surprising in itself. Yeah, I'm sure there are many reasons why the Russian military has not decided to go after this facility or many of the other facilities. I'm sure there are reasons. I don't claim to know those reasons for sure. What could I say? But after four years and so many drone strikes into Russia, it is interesting that these facilities have not been targeted to the extent that they were targeted yesterday. But those are the details of the strike into Kiev. There's really not much more to say. Big strike, the largest strike ever. We have the Oreshnik being used. We have many images and videos coming out of Kiev. A very, very devastating, a devastating strike. 40, 50 targets, maybe even more, throughout Kiev that were hit. I mean, you just go through social media and it's just video after image after image of all of these facilities and these targets being smashed by the Russian missiles. And of course, you have the video footage of the Oreshnik. Many people are talking about how it looks like the Oreshnik is much slower than the previous images of the Oreshnik. And the reason that the video footage appears to be slower is because it's recorded at quite a distance. So if you're recording at a distance, the Oreshnik may look slower, but it's not. It's not slow at all. But because of the footage, it appears that it's moving slow. But that's not the case at all. It's very fast. It's very fast, and there's no way that any air defense is going to be able to take the Oreshnik and all of the various warheads out. It's not going to happen. No chance of that. One sec. There's some music playing. All right. So I just thought I would comment on that. The Odeshnik is not slowed down or anything like that. There's many reasons why it appears from such a far distance to be moving at a slow rate. The tricks of the camera, the tricks of the video recording. Trying to think what else, if I have anything else to say. 700 drones and 100 missiles were used towards Kiev. But here's what I wanted to say. Zelensky was tipped off about this strike way ahead of time. So the U.S. put out a notice yesterday afternoon about the strike. And they actually warned their diplomats and foreigners, American citizens and foreigners in Kiev to seek shelter, to evacuate and seek shelter because a big Russian strike was coming. Zelensky also posted about this as well, that Ukraine is well aware of a big strike that is going to be targeting Kiev, including the use of an Oreshnik. So they were notified well in advance of this strike. So facilities would have been destroyed. I don't know what they could have done as far as clearing out some of those facilities that they were aware of would be targeted by the Russian military. I don't know how much time they would have had to remove certain things or safeguard certain parts of the facility. I don't know what they could have done there, but definitely the people, top level officials, maybe even decision makers, commanders, military officials, whatever, that were in and around these facilities or these decision making centers would have obviously been evacuated, because we had ample warning before the strike was going to take place. I'm not talking about 15 or 20 minutes before. I'm talking about multiple hours, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours before the strike actually happened. The U.S. had tipped off everybody, but including Ukraine, of course, that this strike was coming. So they had time to prepare for it. So I just wanted to mention that. So what is going to happen after this strike? What's the conclusion? What do you guys think is going to happen now post strike into Kiev, this big, massive, large strike into Kiev? Are we going to see a change from the collective West with regards to the escalator? Are they going to try to go a little down on the escalator? Are they going to pull back on the drone strikes into Moscow and into St. Petersburg? Are we going to see something like that happen? Are we going to see some de-escalation because of this massive strike into Kiev? One thing that this strike has shown us, without a doubt, and we're still at an SMO, okay? We're not at some sort of anti-terrorist operation. This has not been upgraded in 4 years. We're still at an SMO. We're not in a state where Russia has declared war. But the one thing that Russia did show yesterday is that they have the weapons, the military capability, and the devastating weapons to end the conflict in a matter of days if they went that route. Of course, that would lead to a lot of destruction. But the weapons that Russia has are absolutely devastating. And they showed it yesterday. But what will the reaction be from the collective West? What will be the reaction from the Europeans and from the Zelensky regime? Are we going to see a pullback from their escalation? I don't think so. If I had to take a guess, and it's just a guess, I would say that the collective West is going to come out with statements that they probably have already prepared. They probably prepared the statements when they first got the intel about attacks coming. So I think everything has already been written out and passed out to all of the collective West leaders, to all the cool kids in the West. One second, there's music.
Оштрафовать его, у него велосипеда нету. Возьмите его, ребята.
Хорошо. 500 рублей. Почему 500 рублей? 1000 рублей. Согласен? 1000 рублей? Шутка это. На Кипр. Да. Греция. Греция. Теперь. Греция. Теперь на Кипре. Куда? Лимассоль. Лимассоль, Ларнака.
Юбор, не разъясни.
15 лет назад я уже
на море, да. Никосия. Хорошо на Кипр.
Хорошо.
Да. Хорошая погода. Но маленький.
Очень
маленький.
Похоже на Абхазию.
Да.
В Абхазии не был?
На
Абхазии. Но это рядом с Грузией.
Но нет.
Там
не
просто люблю. У меня мама запросила.
Рядом в Сочи.
Сочи? Как Сочи? Я не был.
Рядом в Сочи.
Просто да,
это природа
да,
похожая.
Да, да.
Такие же деревья.
Да. Но очень жарко.
И народ такой же.
Да, народ, да. Но на Кипре сейчас очень-очень жарко. Здесь тоже жарко, но не как на Кипре. Да, на Кипре сейчас.
Там рядом вода, поэтому как бы...
Есть хороший пляж, хорошее море, да. Это правда.
Люди веселенькие, мне понравилось.
Да, да.
Просто я много где отдыхал, но вот на Кипре люди мне больше...
Это тебя... Ты когда с Кипра летел, у тебя, по-моему, в аэропорт что-то там...
Это он на Кипре.
Сара,
да?
Милиция
попал. Да. Супер. Окей. Очень приятно. Nice to meet you. Я буду снимать еще видео.
Окей.
Давай, bye-bye. Bye-bye. Окей. What was I saying? I don't even know what I was saying. I lost track of where I was at. Ah, yes. The conclusions that are going to be drawn from this. So I think that that the script has already been passed out. This is just a guess on my part. The collective West leaders are going to say Russian aggression, unprovoked aggression, imperialism, Russian terrorist attacks against Ukraine, etc., etc. I think that's going to be the lines, the statements that they're going to come out with. More money, more weapons. They're going to say that as well. We need to continue to support Ukraine. More money, more weapons. And Ukraine needs to continue to escalate because this attack was a sign of weakness, not a sign of strength, a sign of desperation, not a sign of strength. I think that's going to be the conclusion that they're going to draw from this, or the statements that they're going to put out there. And the conclusion, I think, is going to be, you know, just a couple of days, wait it out a couple of days. And then back to the escalation, back on the escalation escalator. I don't think there's going to be a walk back. I don't know. What do you guys think? I think they're going to brush this off, the West, and they're going to tell Zelensky to just keep on escalating. Here are more targets. Here's more data, satellite data. Keep those drones going and just keep on escalating and keep on fighting and just forget about what the Russians showed. Forget about the military power that was on display in Kiev. That's my take. If I had to take a guess on all of this, give it a couple of days and maybe a couple of weeks, and we'll be back to where we were before the retaliation from Russia. So let's before we get to Iran and the big news out of Iran, we have Maria Zakharova, who actually invited the media to Lugansk, to the dormitory. And she invited media from all over the world to see for themselves what had happened and to get the facts on the ground, to go to Lugansk, see the attack, and to report on it. And she even invited Collective West media to attend as well. And Collective West Media pretty much turned down the foreign ministry. CNN didn't respond. The BBC officially refused. Here's something interesting. Japan, it looks like Japan was going to send a journalist, and then Tokyo decided to cancel the trip. They blocked the journalist from going. So that's an interesting fact. But as expected, they invited the Collective West Media, and the Collective West Media said, we're not interested. Why would they not be interested? They can go there and see for themselves what happened in Lugansk and report on it. But they didn't want to. They had no interest in going, or they were blocked from actually doing journalism, right? I understand why Russia, why the Ministry of Foreign Affairs does this. They want to highlight the Western hypocrisy, the media hypocrisy, how the Collective West propaganda works. So they want to try to highlight that and expose it. But we already know all of this, right? I mean, we already know what the response is going to be. Everyone knows what the response is going to be before the ministry actually invites these outlets to come and see for themselves what happened in Lugansk. So I don't know why they waste their precious time to invite these outlets when we already know what the result is going to be. Of course, they're not going to be interested in going to the dormitory and seeing for themselves. They've got their narrative and they've got their spin. You know, well in advance of any kind of invite or anything like that, when it comes to these types of attacks, they've made up their mind as to what they're going to report on, and of course, it's going to be negative towards Russia and positive towards Ukraine, no matter what happens, no matter what is done in what is done against these civilian targets. So they've already got everything decided on. Anyway, I'm rambling. Anyway, let's move on to Iran. That's the next big story. Should we go that way where it's more quiet? Should we go to the park or should we just keep on walking? You know, it was raining today. It was raining and cold, and not too cold, but raining and a bit chilly. And now the sun is out. I think I've made up my mind and I'm just going to keep on walking. So a big change in weather. But we have Iran. This is the other big news topic for today. And yesterday I was talking about how the Trump administration, along with his national security team, they were talking about restarting the conflict. And they were looking at possible targets in Iran for additional airstrikes. And then we got the news. So that was yesterday. It looked like we were going to get more airstrikes. And then we got the news that we're close to a deal. We're close to a deal, and the deal could be signed tomorrow. When I mean a deal, it's a memorandum of understanding. Oh, my God. So many people. I can't go down this way. There's going to be too much music going on. Impossible. Impossible to record from there. So we're going to have to. We have no choice. We're going to have to go down that way. So we got a memorandum of understanding. One sec. All right, so we have a memorandum of understanding. Axios was calling it a letter of intent a couple of days ago. And according to the reports, once again from Axios, so always with Axios' reporting, you know, be skeptical with Axios' reporting. But a lot of other media outlets are picking up on this news as well. And we have a 60-day, what's being proposed is a 60-day ceasefire once this MOU is signed. The MOUs. I've seen many MOUs in my previous life. But once all of this is signed, we get 60 days of a ceasefire. And during those 60 days, here's the interesting part about what is being proposed. During those 60 days, the United States and Iran are going to be negotiating on the enriched uranium. So that's going to be the main focus of the 60-day ceasefire, or the continuation of a ceasefire. And certain other actions are going to be taken by both sides in order to build some trust or some confidence in one another and each other. For example, the Strait of Hormuz will be opened. Now, we don't know the details of what that means. Is it going to be opened with a fee? Is the fee going to be in place, but all ships will pass? Is it going to be opened without a toll or a fee? In which case, Iran would lose, they would lose their leverage, no doubt about it. Even if it's opened with a fee, Iran runs the risk of losing their leverage over the United States. Or is it going to remain as it is? Is Iran still going to control what passes through the Strait of Hormuz? And are they going to collect their fee? So we don't know exactly what the situation is going to be with the Strait of Hormuz. It just says that it's going to open. Trump actually said it's going to open in full. It's going to open up completely. That's what Trump said in his Truth Social post as he announced this 60-day ceasefire, the continuation of a 60-day ceasefire. The United States is going to ease up on sanctions. They're going to provide some sanctions waivers, some sanctions relief. They're going to unfreeze some assets, though we don't have any specifics. And it's going to be phased in, phased out, however you want to call it, within the 60 days. And it's going to be dependent on how the negotiations with the uranium enrichment goes, how, according to Axios, how Iran behaves in those 60 days, then the United States is going to ease up on sanctions and return some of the frozen assets. And depending on how the negotiations go with the uranium, the United States is also going to phase out their blockade of Iran. They're not going to remove the blockade, but over the 60 days, if things are moving along with the uranium negotiations, then step by step, they will start to remove the blockade on Iran. And here's an important part to this memorandum of understanding, the war in Lebanon is going to end completely. You can also have a 60-day ceasefire in Lebanon as well, which also leads to many questions. How does that get enforced? Because that's going to be completely dependent on Israel. How do you enforce that one? So that's the MOU that could be signed even today. By the time this video goes up, this MOU might be signed. You also have some outlets saying that in the MOU, the U.S. military is also going to leave the region. Once again, depending on how the uranium enrichment negotiations proceed, then the U.S. is going to remove their military assets from the region. If you're Iran, and if this is indeed the MOU that is being put on the table, how do you ensure that the United States is not going to attack you again? Especially once you start to open up the Strait of Hormuz, if that is indeed the plan. What are the security guarantees that are in place? We don't know any of the details to all of this. I think it was Tasmin or Fars news outlet. They are reporting that Iran is indeed close to getting this memorandum of understanding signed. They're very close to some sort of a deal with the United States based on these points. But they also said that Trump is being very optimistic. He's getting ahead of himself. And he's basically announcing the deal for media purposes.
So Iran is acknowledging that this MOU is there. They are acknowledging that there is progress in the talks and the negotiations. But they're saying that it's not as far along as Trump is making it out to be. We'll find out today, right? We'll find out exactly where we are with all of this. Axios's article is exclusive. What's inside the Iran deal? Trump is close to signing. And the New York Times, they posted an article where they claim that Iran has agreed already to give up their enriched uranium. And this New York Times article is already being debunked. It's being rejected by Iranian officials. They are saying, no, we have not agreed to that. The uranium enrichment is going to be the main topic of negotiations in the 60-day ceasefire. So the New York Times, Iran agreed to give up enriched uranium in deal announced by Trump, U.S. officials say. Iranian officials are claiming this is fake news. Trump posted on Truth Social about how this deal was effectively, essentially put together or endorsed by all of the countries in the region, the Gulf nations, as well as Turkey and Pakistan, which mediated all of this. That they're the countries that want to see this happen, and they're the countries that worked along with the United States to put this deal together. And the reason that Trump is highlighting this, and the reason that he is emphasizing this, is because he needs cover. He needs cover because, as the president of the United States, he cannot go to Israel and say, I need to walk this thing back because the U.S. is losing. He can't say that because the neocons, Israel, they will not allow Trump to walk this thing back in such a way. So he needs some cover. And he's using the Gulf states. He's using Turkey, Pakistan mediation, so that he can then say, look, it's not so much me, it's not so much the United States, but it's the countries in the region that want to see this thing come to some sort of a deal, some sort of an end. And so I'm going to help those countries out. We're winning this thing. We've obliterated everything in Iran, et cetera, et cetera. But I am going to work with our partners and allies in the region so that we can come to some sort of solution. He needs to say that, not only for say the neocons, cover for the neocons or Israel, but also so that he can try to position this as a U.S. victory as well. We won and we were winning, and Iran was just about ready to collapse. Any day now, they were going to collapse, but the Gulf countries and Turkey and Pakistan said, let's just end this today, right? So I went along with them. I like it. I like it a lot. So he really emphasized the fact that the Gulf countries were very much involved with all of this. It's all cover. He's just getting them to provide cover for him. I mean, he names all the leaders from all the Gulf countries, all of them, from Saudi Arabia to the UAE, to Qatar, to Pakistan, to Jordan, to Bahrain, to Turkey. And he actually mentions Iran as the Islamic Republic of Iran. It's actually in the Truth Social post concerning the Islamic Republic of Iran and all things related to the Memorandum of Understanding pertaining to peace. So he says that in his Truth Social post. And then he also says that final aspects and details of the deal are currently being discussed and will be announced shortly. In addition to many other elements of the agreement, the Strait of Hormuz will be opened. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Donald J. Trump. The Strait of Hormuz will be opened. I don't know about that. I really don't know about that. I think the Hormuz thing is going to be a big topic of debate and discussion over the next day or two. You know, if you go by these terms, it is a U.S., I would say on balance, it's a U.S. capitulation on balance. And if these are indeed the real terms, and if we really do get a signed MOU, it is Trump trying to get an off-ramp exiting this thing in a way that clearly shows that the U.S. lost this war. Because what are you getting? You're going to get the Strait of Hormuz open again in one form or another. And it was already open before this conflict started, and it was free. So you go back to how it was before the conflict. Maybe you're going to have fees as well. Maybe that's going to be in there. And then you're negotiating for the uranium, and you're having to provide sanctions relief and to unfreeze assets. Yeah, the neocons are not happy about this. And they're already posting about how unhappy they are. Lindsey Graham is already upset and angry. Israel's not going to be happy about this. Netanyahu, they're not going to let Trump walk away from this in such a way. It's going to be very difficult for him to take this exit, this off-ramp. Lindsey Graham actually posted on X. I'm not going to read you his entire post because it's a pretty long post for Lindsey. He said, if a deal is struck to end the Iranian conflict because it is believed that the Strait of Hormuz cannot be protected from Iranian terrorism and Iran still possesses the capability to destroy major Gulf oil infrastructure, then Iran will be perceived as being a dominant force requiring a diplomatic solution. Then Lindsey goes on to say, also it makes one wonder why the war started to begin with. If these perceptions are accurate, I personally am a skeptic of the idea that Iran cannot be denied the ability to terrorize the Strait and the region cannot protect itself against Iranian military capability. It is important we get this right. Basically, Lindsey Graham, speaking on behalf of the neocon crowd, is saying, Trump, don't you dare walk away from this. We've been wanting this war for 47 years. We have been wanting this regime change, the collapse of Iran. We finally got a hot war, and we're not going to let you walk away from it. We have never been this close ever before. And now we finally have a hot war with Iran, finally. And you're talking about an off-ramp. You're talking about an exit. You're trying to find an excuse to get out of this. No freaking way. That's the message from Lindsey Graham. No doubt about it. It's going to be difficult for this deal to come together. And we have 60 days, even if they do sign a memorandum of understanding. It's not a treaty. It's not a new security architecture, anything like that. It's an MOU. And 60 days of negotiations, and so much can go wrong in 60 days, right? So much can go wrong as they're negotiating. And then the hostilities can start up again. And then you're going to have so many false flags and sabotage incidents taking place. Yeah, this is going to be a hard one to put together. And there's no trust at all. Yeah, the other times that Iran has been negotiating with the United States, we've seen what's happened. We've had decapitation strikes. We've had the assassination of negotiators. It's going to be a tough one. No doubt about it. But we are close. And both sides acknowledge that we are close to a deal. Both sides are saying that. So that's Lindsey Graham, Pompeo, Israel are all advising President Trump not to accept this current deal with Iran. Yeah, they're going to be furious with Trump. Absolutely furious. If Trump really is intending to take this off-ramp, I'm working off of the assumption that Trump wants this off-ramp. I've said in previous videos that we could be seeing a lot of good cop, bad cop going on, and the United States could launch a strike into Iran any day now. It is a U.S. foreign policy built on trickery and deception. So that is also a possibility. Especially if Iran gives up their leverage of Hormuz and they don't have ironclad security guarantees, then we could definitely be seeing a big strike into Iran. Once again, we're just talking about an MOU. That's all we're talking about here. can easily be broken or sabotaged. So there's one more thing I wanted to say about the neocons and about Lindsey Graham's post. But I forgot. I forgot what I wanted to say. Anyway, all right, let's continue. Let's keep on pushing forward, and maybe it'll come to me what I wanted to say about Lindsey Graham telling Trump, we're not going to walk away from this. So U.S. Tomahawks depleted from the war with Iran. This is according to the Financial Times. They have told the United States, Japan. They've told Japan that the Tomahawk order that they had queued up is now going to be delayed by 2 years because the Tomahawks are gone. They've all been used up in the conflict with Iran. Of course, it was Tomahawk missiles that killed the girls in Iran in the first or second day of the war. Those were Tomahawks. But the Financial Times is reporting that the United States is now having to tell its partners and its allies that they don't have any Tomahawks to send them. And they're going to have to wait a couple of years. If they say 2 years, they're going to probably have to wait 3 or 4 years. So once again, we see the weapons depletion in the U.S. military. Look, 60 days could also be a way for the U.S. military to replenish its stockpiles to a certain extent, to rearm and replenish. Iran as well is going to use the 60 days to rearm and replenish as well. So those 60 days will be utilized by both of the countries to refill their arsenals. So Zelensky, let's turn back to Project Ukraine. He has turned down BlackRock Mertz's offer to give Ukraine associate membership status. Podolyak, what is this membership associate status? What is this thing? I don't understand. And Zelensky does not understand what this offer from Mertz is all about. Or he does understand, and he doesn't like it. He doesn't like it at all. He actually sent a letter to Vanderpirate, he sent a letter to BlackRock Mertz, to all of the EU cool kids, and he said, thanks, but no thanks. No associate membership status. We want full membership into the European Union. According to Reuters, who has seen the letter, it would be unfair for Ukraine to be present in the European Union but remain voteless. The time is right to move forward with Ukraine's membership in a full and meaningful way. In his letter, the Ukrainian leader reportedly claimed that his country deserves a fair approach and equal rights within Europe as it is supposedly defending the bloc. You know, on this one, once again, I said this in a video the other day. Alexander said this as well in a video that we posted on the Duran. Zelensky is right. He's 100% right on this one. BlackRock Mertz made up this status of associate member, completely made up, fictitious. You're part of the EU and you get money from the EU, but you have no rights. That's what Ukraine has now, right? As I said, they get more money from the EU than full members in the European Union, but what they want is membership. They want it for political reasons. Zelensky wants it for his own personal reasons as far as keeping power in Kiev, remaining as president and keeping power. They want the voting rights. They want to become a full member because they were promised full membership. What was the promise that the EU made to Ukraine and continues to make to Ukraine? The promise is exactly what Zelensky says in this letter. He is saying, look, you guys always tell us that we're defending Europe. You tell us that we're the best military in the world. You tell the media that we're defeating Russia. You guys are saying this, Europe. You're going on and on about how we're returning the tide in this war. We're the strongest military. We're the best military. The European armies could learn from Ukraine. Ukraine is defending all of Europe. He's not wrong about this. And now you're telling us, as we're defending all of Europe, now you're telling us we don't deserve a full membership into the European Union. We're defending you, the words that you guys are using, and now you won't even give us full membership. You come up with this made-up fantasy title, BlackRock Mertz. Bro, what is up with that? Because Ukraine, Zelensky, he understands what's going on, but here's what the deal is. He understands what's going on, or maybe he doesn't. I don't know. But for the Europeans, the EU, what they're telling Ukraine, what they want for you from Ukraine, they don't want them in the European Union. They don't want them in the EU. Not at all. What they want Ukraine to do is to continue the proxy war, to continue to fight on their behalf, to continue to fight Russia. Because in their minds, they continue. And for them, in 2-3 years, Russia's going to be significantly weakened. So they can then jump in and take over or start their war with Russia, whatever they go on and on about, right? So they want Ukraine to continue to this conflict for another 2-3 years, in their minds, to continue to weaken Russia. And there's no membership. It's not about Ukraine protecting Europe. It's about Ukraine fighting Russia to weaken Russia on behalf of Europe. So look, the Green Goblin, he is 100% correct in turning down this associate member stuff. But that's the reality of the situation. The EU does not want Ukraine in the EU. They want Ukraine to fight on. That's what they want. No membership. Just fight our war for us. So Pavel, the Czech president, he gave an interview and he talked about how NATO needs to show its teeth to Russia. That's the exact quote, show its teeth to Russia. Pavel claims that NATO has not shown what it can do yet to Russia and that Russia deserves, that Russia only responds to power, and NATO needs to show its power. Russia, unfortunately, does not understand nice language. They mostly understand the language of power, ideally accompanied with action, he claimed. When I asked them why they do these provocative actions in the air, their answer was, because we can. That's exactly the kind of behavior we allowed. Pavel is using a whole lot of projection, but I'm sure he asked Russia, as he says in this quote, he talked to Russia and he asked him, why do you do these things? Why are you doing these things? And I'm sure Russia's response to Pavel was, because we can. Yeah, that's exactly how the conversation went down. Mr. Pavel, in your freaking mind, that's how the conversation went down, in your imagination, in your dreams. But yeah, we got to escalate. You see, that's the language that's the only language they know. We just got to escalate, continue to escalate. That's the European position. There is no off ramp for the Europeans. So NATO needs to show its teeth, right? There is no teeth. NATO has no teeth, especially without the United States. NATO is toothless. Okay, so let's start there. But then again, that is Pavel's message, isn't it? Maybe he's not talking so much to Russia, but he's talking to the United States. Without the United States, NATO has no teeth, but we need the United States to show our power. So Fico, he is warning about an Article 5 scenario with all of the drone chaos. I actually discussed this a couple of days ago, that the drone chaos is very provocative and could be something that leads to an Article 5 situation. And Fitso put out a statement saying that this could lead to an Article 5 situation. And he's very worried about that. The drones that are in NATO airspace, and they're trying to hit Russian territory, and then they fall onto NATO territory. You have to scramble fighter jets to knock them down. According to Fitso, we run a very real risk of having some sort of Article 5 scenario playing out. So that is Fitso's warning. And finally, we can wrap up this video before Clown World and talk about very briefly about another White House shooting. Nothing to really talk about, to be quite honest. Some guy who my understanding of it is mentally ill. The Secret Service already knew about this guy. They've already had run-ins with this guy. And he tried to enter the White House area, but then they shot at him. He tried to pull out a gun, and the Secret Service shot at him, and they killed him. He was taken to a hospital, but he later died. And that's it. That is it. That's what happened yesterday. I'm going the wrong way. I need to go up and that way to get across. Yeah, so that is the White House shooting that happened yesterday. It's my understanding that this guy that was shot believed that he was Jesus or something like that. And so he tried to enter the White House area. And so that's what happened yesterday. It's interesting because you had media reporting from the White House, like doing their daily report, their daily updates from the White House, and then the shootings started, and that's all been captured on video, and the reporters like hear the gunfire, and they started taking cover. So Trump was unaffected in all of this. My understanding is that he was in the White House at the time, but everything was pretty much contained and under control. So that is the latest shooting around the White House that took place yesterday. And I think now we can get into Clown World territory. And I do hear some music, so I might turn the audio down just for a little bit. Maybe not. I was here the other day recording, actually. So let's go down that way. The other day I walked down that way. I walked down this way. So today's Clown World, we go to Mexico, where Ursula and Stunning and Brave landed in Mexico a couple of days ago, and they're trying to hammer out a deal with Mexico as the EU is trying to diversify their partnerships. And so because no one wants to deal with the European Union anymore, Russia gone, China gone, the U.S. is busting their balls. And so they're trying to make believe that they're pretending to be going out in the world and trying to strike deals with other countries and other potential partners. And so they went to Mexico to see if they can get something going. And Stunning and Brave, she was speaking in Mexico, and she started to talk about Cuba and everything that's going on in Cuba. And she blamed it all on Cuba, not the United States. Everything that's happening in Cuba is all Cuba's fault, according to Stunning and Brave. According to Voice of Mexico, they are reporting that in Mexico City, Kaya Kallas blamed indirectly Havana for Cuba's crisis while ignoring decade of U.S. intervention and overlooked violence of Venezuela's sovereignty. Mexico and the EU may share values, but not the same views. Now, Mexico and the EU do not share values. They do not share values. Believe me, people of Mexico, you do not want to share values with the EU. Anyway, she doesn't mention the blockade against Cuba that's taking place. She didn't mention the decades and decades of crippling sanctions. Instead, in her speech, she just talks about how this is all Havana's fault. Havana is to blame for everything. And when it comes to Venezuela and the kidnapping Maduro, what kidnapping? What are you talking about? So that was her speech in Mexico. All right, I think I will wrap up the video for today. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on X, we are on Rumble and Telegram. Go to the Duran shop, pick up some merch. 30% off on t-shirts and on hats. And we have the best hats. So definitely check that out. We also have great t-shirts as well. So you get a good discount on all of that. The link is in the description box down below. And I will see everybody tomorrow. Also check us out on Substack as well. And I'm still trying to remember what I wanted to say about the neocons and Iran, but forget about it. Forget about it. The video is over. Almost got hit by a car. I was thinking that this is now pedestrian, but it's not. I saw all the bikes over there and I said, oh, I guess it's all closed off. But nope, there are cars. There are cars. All right, everybody, I will see you tomorrow.